Hello, everyone. This is episode 32 of the iPhone Podcast. For show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. I'm your host, Gary Ng from iPhoneingCanada.ca, and here with me is Justin Louie, our other co-host here. Justin, how are you today?
I'm very good. It's an exciting week for everybody. iPad 2 is out internationally, so I think we'll have a lot to talk about with the iPad, so why don't we go over some of the other news for a few minutes, and then we'll get into detail with the iPad 2.
All right, let's do it. The first rumor here is comes from TechCrunch. The rumor is that iOS 5 will be a, quote, major revamp, and it won't debut until the fall. According to TechCrunch, they have two solid sources that have said Apple will hold off on unveiling the next version of iOS, which would be iOS 5, until this fall, instead of debuting it in the summer as they've done traditionally in the past. If TechCrunch's sources are correct, the iPhone 5 is still likely to debut in the summer, but it will be running a different, running a flavor of the current iOS 4. So what do you think? I mean, we know that iOS 5 is coming. Typically, Apple will do sort of a in-house iOS preview and give some time for developers to build their apps for a WWDC announcement. But for it to debut in the fall, I mean, I don't know what Apple's rationale is behind this. Maybe they've come up with something new, they're working on something big, and they just want to hold off.
Yeah, well, as far as the rumors go, as we know by now from doing this podcast for so long, the rumors are 50-50 to begin with. John Gruber, Paris Lemon over at TechCrunch, these guys do have legitimate sources and get some of this stuff right, but even the good guys are kind of batting 500. And then when it comes to delays, they're about 10% right. If you remember about 3 or 4 weeks ago, everybody was reporting on a rumor that the iPad 2 was going to be delayed to the fall, and it was like 2 days later, Steve Jobs is on stage announcing it. So I'm very skeptical about the delay. Apple doesn't tend to delay. They're on a yearly schedule. They have a long time. They're working on iOS 5 from the minute 4 ships. So I'm a little skeptical about the delay, but I guess if there was ever going to be a delay, it might be this time, because as even I predicted last show, I do believe iOS 5 is going to be the biggest update. I think it's going to be heavily focused on the cloud. I think it's going to tie in even more so to the new iOS Lion than previous versions. So I guess if any version's going to get delayed, maybe they all sort of get delayed and then launch in the fall, completely tied together with this data center in North Carolina. So I think that's possible, but I'm skeptical of the delay, but I think they're absolutely right that iOS 5 will be a big update and include a lot of cloud features.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most of the iOS versions so far have had a similar theme, right? There hasn't been any sort of major structural change in the interface. So if iOS 5 is going to bring that, you know, I'm looking forward to it. As I mentioned before, you know, I think Apple really needs some sort of chat application that will link anyone who has an iOS device so people can communicate with an iPod Touch or an iPad or any iPhone together. I think it's just inevitable for that to happen.
I think that is now safe to say that's your most wanted feature, because yeah, even stories have nothing to do with that rumor, you always bring that up. So
I am going to will that feature into existence.
Another thing I'm going to say about the thing about that is the reason I think that this being a heavily cloud-based update is a no-brainer is Apple is cutting edge a lot of the time, but there's certain times they're slow to adapt certain technologies because they want to make sure it's right. They see Dropbox now. Their apps for the iPhone are great. You can send it through iTunes. That works good enough. But they're no dummies. They see Dropbox sitting there and how good that is. So Apple would have either bought Dropbox already or spruced up iDisk to take on Dropbox if that's what they thought was the perfect solution. So they wouldn't just keep letting these third-party syncing things. They would be doing it themselves if they didn't have something big planned. So as I said last week, I think 1 year from today we'll be looking back and we'll barely recognize that we ever were using the devices this way. I think they're going to be more integrated, wirelessly than ever before. I think a year from now, no matter what device you have, everything will be right there at your fingertips, and it'll all be done through the internet and the cloud.
All right, moving on. Next story here, talking about how the tragedy in Japan, it hasn't actually impacted the iPad 2 supply, rather. Munster expects that the current shortage of the iPad 2 is going to continue into the June 2011 quarter, but basically this shortage is based on demand, not components. Both the iPad and the iPhone could see at most maybe a 1 to 2 week delay due to earthquake related shutdowns. I think, you know, for the iPad 2, with such a successful international launch, I don't think they've had any issues with it. Not that we know of as of now, but their initial iPad 2 supply right now seems to be good. But any supply going further down the road, I mean, there could be a delay because right now ship times are up in, you know, the 3 to 4 weeks. So, you know, there are shortages.
Yeah, I basically put that story in just to kind of counteract all the rumors going the other way. To be honest, the guy who, that Gene Munster, doesn't have the greatest track record when it comes to predicting this type of thing. So maybe there is a delay, we don't know about it. But overall, first of all, I always feel a little funny talking about the situation in Japan delaying our iPhones or our iPads. Those people are suffering, and that's far more important. So let's hope they get the funding and people can move on from this, and that, like, let's think of the human element. But this is a reality as well. And the other reason I wanted to put it in is I hate to see, you already see those people out there sort of playing the Japan tragedy for profit. You go on eBay, you go on Craigslist, you go on Kijiji, and there's actually jerks on there trying to sell iPads for $1,500, saying the situation in Japan means they're not making anymore, so get it now because it's only going to go up. And I hate to see that. So we'll talk more about the launch and how it went in the iPad 2 segment. But if you didn't get one, hang in there. I don't think they'll be that hard to get. They'll be hard to get. It'll take a little effort, but certainly don't pay these people on Kijiji trying to leverage a tragedy into a profit.
Yeah, definitely not. Cannot support people like that. Apple releases iOS 4.3.1. This was basically a couple weeks after they released iOS 4.3, but that was enough time for Apple to identify a number of bugs and fix this update in 4.3.1. There was an issue for those people who are interested in jailbreaking at the Pwn to Own hacking conference. The fellow who was able to take control of an iPhone 4 running iOS 4.2, he used an exploit that was in iOS at the time, and he was pretty confident that Apple would patch this exploit since they were given, I guess, you know, the exploits were made public. But according to him, he's checked iOS 4.3.1, and that exploit is actually still open. Now, this exploit doesn't mean that it's going to help in jailbreaking and unlocking any iOS devices, but it does give light at the end of the tunnel for the cat and mouse game to continue.
Exploits, they sound worse than they are. They're not something that really anybody's out there hacking your stuff in reality. So I don't think it's anything to be that concerned. I found it interesting that a lot of blogs seem to be so surprised that an update came this quickly. You see a lot of 0.1 releases fairly quickly. Apple tends to do this quite a bit, so I wasn't that surprised. But I didn't notice anything much different. Some people were reporting some issues with 4.3 when it comes to battery, and this supposedly helps some of those people. I wasn't noticing much in the way of battery, but that's just me. I tend to have it plugged in a lot throughout the day. I'm only ever kind of away from my desk for hours at a time, so I wasn't really suffering from batteries. But if you were having a battery issue, then it's probably good to update as soon as you can. You should always. It's unless you're a jailbreaker, it's probably smart to keep your system up to date.
Definitely. Next story here, new Mobile Me with Music Locker and a $20 a year price tag. This story talks about how informed sources mentioned that Apple has sealed a deal with Time Warner, and that they're going to be using this agreement to leverage other labels to get deals done in time for this supposedly April launch. This music locker service will have a price tag around $20. So this once again ties into this $1 billion data center in North Carolina that Apple's built, that Apple has built. Once again, going back to the cloud, is iTunes going to the cloud?
Yeah, I guess this is going to be just like every other rumor. They keep up until the day it's announced. So I guess every week we'll talk about Mobile Me until it actually comes out. My guess is still that it's probably going to be, at least at a basic level, free. I could see something like the music locker being an extra $20. So I think that's what they're predicting. I think that kind of makes sense. The one thing that bugs me, and I won't get off on a whole tangent because we discuss it every week, Apple shouldn't even have to negotiate this with the record labels. They're trying to set up a situation that if I buy a song, I can then store it in the cloud and listen to it. Well, isn't that the point? When I bought a CD, I could listen to it anywhere. And the music industry is just going to keep scratching their head, wondering why their industry continues to suffer. This is why. It's bad enough you want me to pay $10 for a CD or an MP3 version of an album that I used to be able to buy the CD for $10. You somehow still want $10, even though it's a digital file, and I'm really not getting anything of value outside of the music. It's zeros and ones. And now Apple wants to do this one thing that actually finally, for the first time in music, makes you feel like, hey, there's a little bit of ownership here. I can store it here and then access it anywhere. And some record labels don't even want that. It's, again, just an illustration of what is wrong with the industry to begin with. But if anyone can force these companies into doing it, it'll be Apple. So hopefully we see it.
Yeah, definitely. I think when it comes to these things, Apple can leverage that. They have over 160 million Apple IDs associated with credit cards. So, I mean, that's a huge market, you know, just ready to buy. So something that Apple can continue to use to leverage to these music labels. Now, that's it for some of the news that we wanted to talk about. Let's focus on this iPad 2 launch. The international launch, rather. It launched on the 25th in Canada. It launched on the 25th in a whole bunch of other countries around the world at the same time. Now, the significant thing about this launch was that your co-host here, Justin, from the iPhone podcast, he picked up his first ever iPad, and it happened to be an iPad 2. So, Justin, I want to hear your thoughts as a non-original iPad owner. What are your thoughts to the listeners out there who are considering an iPad 2 and they've never used one before? Just share your initial experiences.
Like, I could go on for that for 3 hours, so I'll try to keep it brief. We'll try to keep it organized. I have some notes here that Gary and I will go through various aspects of the launch. I apologize in advance to anybody who's had their iPad for a while and is sick of hearing it, or people who just don't want one. The podcast tends to be mostly iPhone related, and it'll continue to be. We'll be at our normal format next week, but I do think this launch is worthy. Friday, I got it. I've wanted one for a long time. Really, if you remember when Steve Jobs first announced the iPad last year, it was met with a lot of skepticism. I would say the range kind of went from extreme disappointment to, at the best end, sort of a cautious optimism. Everybody was sort of saying, hey, this is just a big iPhone. And what I said at the time was, yes, it is just a big iPhone, but the iPhone's pretty damn good. So a big iPhone, that sounds pretty cool to me. And when I first tried it last year, I kind of came to that conclusion. It's sort of just a big iPhone. I have an iPhone, so I'm not going to get one. Now, a year later, and I'm not just saying because of the hardware, if you have an iPad 1, I don't know that you need to upgrade. It's just the hardware, it's the software, it's the third-party developers. This is a completely different product than it was last year. So that's kind of my initial reaction, that it's no longer just a big iPhone 4. It's this whole new situation. I think we should talk a little bit about the launch first, from the standpoint that people who are still looking for them, it seems that Apple has got a huge amount of stock, but they're sold out now. They continue to restock it. So just keep trying if you're out there. And I know you were reporting on a lot of that, and it sounds like some places even may have restocked already. So just keep trying.
Yeah, basically, Apple started sales online at 1 a.m. Basically, I was reporting the Canadian iPad 2 launch on launch day and the night before. People were lining up for this iPad 2, I guess, just like the other iPad, the original iPad launch. But this time it seemed like lines were just even longer compared to before. Now, the one example was this fellow, Laurent, from Toronto. He was lining up outside the Eaton Center in Toronto, and he started his lineup at about 2 o'clock Pacific time on, I guess it was Thursday. So it's absolutely incredible that they lined up that far in advance. Now, the craziest part about their lineup experience at Eaton Center was that security actually had to force the lineup to head outside from 1:30 a.m. to about 5 a.m. Now, for those who aren't aware, it's spring, technically spring, but the weather is still very cold. And the temperature that night was minus 21 degrees Celsius. And imagine being outside for about 4.5 hours. That's props to those guys for lasting through the night outside, not moving in such extreme weather. Now, as for other stores across the country, people were also lined up at other Apple stores, but they were also lined up at Best Buy's, the Future Shops, and other smaller Apple resellers. Now, I know that people who went to smaller resellers were able to get stock, but some models were limited. I know that Apple stores, even though these lineups were, you know, spanning up to like 400 to 500, even more, they were able to accommodate for everyone. So, I mean, Apple seemed really prepared for this international launch. I think on the first day, I didn't really receive any tweets about, oh, you know, I was stood in line and I didn't get an iPad. Everyone was like, oh, I got my iPad. And even once the lines dispersed, people went back to the Apple store, you know, later at night, and they only had to wait like an hour. So even the next day, people were able to just walk right in and get an iPad. So it's pretty amazing. Apple, you know, it looks like they staggered their supply. I know they did this for the iPhone 4 launch. They had an initial amount on the first day, and then they would save a whole bunch of phones for the next day. So, so far, I would say it's a good launch, but right now stocks are in very short supply.
The thing that amazed me is, first of all, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the stock level now that it's launched everywhere, because there's no doubt that the delay in the US had a lot to do with them building up supply for international. If you remember, a lot of us feared that the international launch would either be delayed or the quantities would be severely limited. When I started seeing reports of hundreds of people in line at all these Apple stores, and then to find out later that night that pretty much everybody who lined up got one, I was shocked. My experience was actually kind of funny, and I got really lucky. I have a really weird schedule, and I tend to usually sleep during the day and stay up all night. And Thursday night, I just decided I'm busy tomorrow. I got different things to do. These lineups are crazy. It's freezing outside. I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to stay up, attempt to order it online. And then I figured I'll order it online. And if I walk into a store and get lucky, I'll just cancel my online order. I went on to order it online when it was supposed to launch, and either I had the time wrong or they were a little slow because I kept refreshing and it wasn't there. So then I made the mistake of assuming, okay, they must just be waiting into the morning to do it. Then I finally logged back in about an hour later and they were already on sale. They were already delayed 1 or 2 weeks, but I put my order in anyways. And then that night, at Friday night at 7:30 p.m., 2.5 hours after launch, I decided that I would head down to Future Shop because I don't have an Apple store near me. And I figured, best case scenario, they'll have demo units already and I can get my hands on it that way. There was nobody really around, but they did have the demo units. So I went up and started messing around with it for a second. Guy came up, said, oh, can I help you? And I was like, do you have any iPad 2s? And it was funny because the guy gave me the strangest look. He said, we had people lined up here at 4 a.m. Like, you think we, he goes, you think we have iPads? I'm like, oh, I figured I'd take a shot. And then he laughed. He's like, no, we do have some. I go, really? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, do you have a 16 gig? He's like, yeah, we do. I'm like, oh, cool. And then he's like, now I feel bad for the guy who was here at 4 a.m. and now you just strolled in at 7:30 and got one. So I heard a lot of stories like that. People tend to flock now to the Apple stores. So you can go to these smaller, well, I guess Future Shop isn't smaller, but these other alternatives, they tend not to get very good stock, but you might get lucky. So in my Future Shop, I don't know why they would stagger it, but they must have got another order in, because they did sell out slightly after that. Like, while I was still in the store, more people came in and bought the last few. And then I called Saturday just out of curiosity, and they had got a few more in. And he said, we're about to sell out again. So again, don't panic. Don't rush out and pay these people jacking up the price. Just wait patiently, make some calls to your places. And it seems like Apple's pretty committed to getting this thing out as quick as they can.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the next day I had so many tweets about people saying, you know what, I just went to the Apple store and there wasn't a lineup. There was about a 30-minute wait and I have my iPad. So basically the moral of the story is, if you don't want to get that experience of waiting in line for the initial launch on the first day, just go back the next day and, you know, go at a time that's not very busy, I guess, and just try your luck. And it definitely pays off. Like you said, you just need to call around and just, you know, go back to basics. Just call around. You can follow at iPad in Canada on Twitter if you are in Canada and you want to check out where stock is available. I have people sending me messages about where stock is available, and I've been retweeting that for everyone. So you just need to be persistent. You need to put in some effort to call around. Don't just, you know, assume that it's sold out. And like Justin said, it helps to find those stores that, you know, maybe aren't as popular or just not in a busy center, because you'll have greater chances of finding an iPad 2 in stock.
And I should just mention quickly before we get into more details about our impressions and using the iPad, there is a small number of iPads that are suffering from what you call a light leak issue, which basically means when you go to a black screen, you'll notice a little bit of light leaking around the edges from the back of, it's like a backlit screen, and the seal, or for whatever reason, a little bit of light leaks out. Mine actually does suffer from it a little bit. You really have to look for it. You can barely notice it. And of course, now I called Future Shop and they're like, hell, we'd love to exchange it for you, but we don't have any. But then I did call Apple and they are aware of the problem, and you're in no hurry. If you have that issue, just hold on to your iPad for as long as you want. And they said that you can exchange it. You have the full year hardware warranty on it. And they said something like that, that we're aware of, will even replace after that fact. So if you do have it, don't worry about it. Just wait a little while. So there's some more time, and I'm just going to wait. If it ever really bothers me or gets worse, I'll just go in a few months and swap it out.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I actually had someone actually return theirs and get an exchange right in the Apple store due to this light leakage problem. No issues whatsoever. The Apple store just said, okay, yep, no worries. Bam, here's a new one. So definitely visit the Apple store and let them know. But, you know, they are definitely very busy right now. I think, you know, that basically covers the launch. I mean, people, you know, who waited in line, they seem to have gotten one. But now, right now, I think, you know, stocks have started to decline to the point where the ship times have reached up to 3 to 4 weeks in Canada. Initially, the ship times were 2 to 3 weeks on launch day, but now they've, you know, gone up to 3 to 4 weeks. Now, let's talk about using the iPad. I mean, what were your initial impressions when you picked up the iPad 2 out of the box?
Well, the first impressions are like any Apple product. It's the packaging, the presentation, everything about it. They're works of art. I was pleasantly surprised, even though I decided not to get an iPad last year. And actually, I did buy one briefly and then sold it quickly for a profit and kept meaning to buy another one. But the new form factor, it's definitely thinner, like you've heard. It makes it more comfortable, even though it's only slightly lighter. That slight bit of difference, plus maybe the weight distribution, it just feels a little more comfortable. in your hand. So those were my initial impressions. And then now after using it several days, I was concerned before, like not owning it, that, hey, this is a cool device, but how comfortable is it going to be in all these different situations? And that's the thing that surprised me. Even though I've only had it 2 days, I have found a comfortable way to use it in every possible scenario. Like I mentioned to you before, if I'm sitting at my desk, I use the case to give it that typing stand. If I'm sitting on a couch, like how Steve Jobs always has his feet up and sort of on your knees, that's a super comfortable way to use it. Even laying in bed, you kind of just prop it up on your chest different ways. It's far more usable than I thought it was going to be. You heard a lot of people with the first one say, oh, I like it, but my arms start to get tired and all those things. But I don't know if it's just I found unique ways to do it, or this new one being a little lighter and thinner, I find it very comfortable to use. And believe me when I tell you, I have been using this thing for hours. I mean, I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but I probably used it 10 hours a day for these first 2 days. So there's no shortage of time with it.
There's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's an Apple product. You know what? Coming from the original iPad and using the iPad 2, I found it to be significantly lighter and thinner. Now, previously, I had my first iPad in that black Apple case that sort of, you know, hid the nice aluminum design of the iPad. But now without it, the only case that I have on is the smart cover. I did apply the full body invisible shield by Zag. That has helped protect the back. I did put it on the screen just to see if I would like to have it on the screen. I did have it on my first iPad, but so far I managed to do a pretty good install. And I noticed that the iPad 2 screen is actually brighter than the original iPad when they're both at the same settings. And I checked the ambient light sensor, but even on full brightness, the iPad 2 screen seems a lot brighter just by a little notch. I have pictures that are side by side, and you know, it's pretty weird, but I think the screen does look phenomenal.
I think Apple wanted to be very careful with saying too much about the screen, considering it's weird for them to sort of have one product, the iPhone, where they continue to promote the Retina display as almost its crowning feature, and then to release another product that's less than that in some ways. I don't think they wanted to say too much about the screen, but it is better. Just because something has the same resolution doesn't mean those parts aren't working better a year later. I'm sure it's a better screen. It's thinner. They're now doing that same process where they glue the glass together differently. So I find that it does look, not only does it look better than last year, another one of those concerns I had for the iPad is I've been so impressed with the Retina display. I'm so spoiled with that. I'm at the point now where even though I have this 13-inch MacBook, I actually want to read things on my phone because the text and everything is so much crisper. I was concerned that the iPad was going to really look like a step down, and it doesn't at all. It almost looks like a Retina display. So if for whatever reason you felt that, hey, I've kind of held off, I'm going to wait till they have a Retina display on the iPad, I don't think that's a concern. The screen on this thing is beautiful.
Yeah, I guess that's the whole debate about whether or not the iPad 2 should have come with a Retina display. I mean, yeah, with the iPhone, the iPhone and the iPod Touch with the Retina display, because the screen is so much smaller, you are holding it closer. So if you do that with the iPad or the iPad 2 display, you do see the pixels, but with the iPhone 4, you can't. Most of the time when you use your iPad, it's kind of at almost an arm's length. And, there's no way you can see the pixels in the first place. So, I mean, I think this screen does look really, really good from a distance, but there's no need to hold the iPad, 15 or 20 centimeters away from your face. You would never do that. So, I mean, I can see how, there is no need for a Retina at the moment. But as, competitors and as people demand it, or, Apple probably has this planned right now in the pipeline, but there's absolutely no need for it right now because you don't hold the iPad so close that you would see the pixels. But with the iPhone, you do. So that's the debate.
Yeah, there really isn't a need. And more importantly, the technology just isn't there to have a screen this big at a Retina resolution, and then the price. Like, maybe Apple could have done one this year and it'd be $2,500 or something. Like, it just doesn't, it's not feasible at this point. Soon as it is, that will be in there. Another thing before we move on that I think is really worth mentioning about the screen is Apple's decision, and it seemed very questionable at the time, but we almost should learn by now. Maybe it's the, you always got to be skeptical of that reality distortion field, but more often than not, when Apple makes a decision, they do it for a reason and they get it right. And what I'm referring to is the fact that the iPad is a 4x3 ratio instead of a true widescreen. And a lot of people looked at that as a negative, and then even some of the competitors now are coming out in a 16x10 format and kind of pimping that as the reason to buy it. And I can tell you, if you're going to buy an iPad and basically watch movies 90% of the time, then maybe you go out and buy a Galaxy Tab or one of these devices that are really thin and widescreen. But as far as this device goes, 4:3 is the way to go for a tablet. It is super comfortable to hold it in portrait. It's comfortable the other way. If you look at a Galaxy Tab or these other tabs that are 16:9, they look ridiculous in portrait mode, so you're almost forced to do it in the widescreen mode. And then if you're trying to type or read a newspaper, everything's sort of really wide and cut off. So a lot of people kind of looked, hey, why would Apple make it 4:3 when they're really trying to promote movies? I prefer it that way. Yes, you're going to get some letter bars at the bottom if you're going to be watching a lot of movies. But again, I'm probably only going to watch movies, say, 10 or 15% of the time, and then be doing all this other type of work. So I think they made the right decision when it comes to that layout. And as I said, if you plan on doing work, newspapers, comic books, 4:3 is the way to go. So unless you plan to buy a tablet for 99% movie watching, then I think this is the way to go.
Yeah, really, like you said, it really depends on how you're going to use the iPad. But, you know, if you use this, the iPad for surfing a web page in either landscape or portrait mode looks phenomenal. But if you go out and you try a Galaxy Tab or any sort of widescreen tablet, it's just not going to be the same experience. And I mean, when you buy a tablet, how often are you going to spend watching movies? I mean, it really comes down to the overall experience, not just emphasizing video.
And really, if you're watching movies, it's, don't get me wrong, watching movies on this thing is great. A lot of people will just do the double tap, which sort of makes it like your old TV days where it sort of pinches and zooms it, almost like pan and scan. Or you can do it with the black bars at the bottom. And for me, I was the geek who in the 90s was buying letterbox versions of Star Wars and laser discs and things. So I spent a lot of time watching widescreen movies on a square TV. So the black bars don't bother me. So again, unless you plan to basically use it for 99% movie watching, I don't think you would like these widescreen tablets. They look goofy, and when you're holding them in portrait, it just doesn't work right. It's a terrible layout.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the apps? Let's talk about some of the apps that you know, a new iPad owner should have. What do you have down in your notes that you want to talk about right now that we haven't gotten to?
Okay, just right before we do that, because we breezed over it, you mentioned it. I agree with everything you said last week about the smart cover. It is thin, it is light, it adds absolutely no bulk to it. I cannot see, maybe in a couple months somebody else will come up with something interesting, but right now, I think if you've spent the money you've spent on the iPad 2, spend the extra $40-$50 and get the smart cover. Everything with the magnets is exactly what it's cracked up to be. It goes on perfect every time. It's easy to remove, but it doesn't come off unless you want it to. You can hang the thing off from it, whatever you want. It doesn't disconnect. It adds zero bulk. The back, as Gary mentioned, I think putting an invisible shield is the way to go. But even if you don't, if you're not transporting it in a bag, I don't think the back necessarily is going to get that scratch, because when it's in the typing mode, it's not really touching the back. And what I do is when I'm storing it, I place the smart pad down, the smart cover down. So I will just concur with what you said about the smart cover. It's really comfortable. And as I was saying to Gary before the show, even though I've just had it 2 days, I found 20 different uses for it that Apple hasn't done. You can, I fold it halfway back and then back again, almost like how you used to hold a newspaper. So if you are sitting there reading with it just in one hand, you can almost kind of grip it better. You can make a sort of a bigger triangle to make it like slightly different typing stand. Like, I just find that it's so versatile, and with the magnets, you can lock it into these different positions. And as crazy as it seemed when they first announced it, you know, Steve Jobs saying, oh, we got this magical new cover, everything about it you've heard is true. And again, as geeky as this sounds, the fact that it just goes to sleep when you close it and then wakes the thing up when you open it is amazing. I every time I touch my iPhone now, I'm like, I really got to like slide to unlock this thing. Like, how old fashioned is that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the issue with the smart cover is that it's now this product that it complements the iPad 2. It's like you can't have one without the other. And whereas before last year, when you look at that black case, not a lot of people were inclined to buy it because A, it was hard to put on, and B, it was kind of flimsy and people didn't like it. I actually loved it. I thought it was great. But now the smart cover, it's innovative. It's great. Like you said, different uses for it. I know Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times, he likes some sort of accordion fold. I haven't tried that yet. But whenever I'm holding the iPad with one hand, I do have it folded over where the microfiber is on the inside, and I just fold it in half and it's resting on the back. It kind of gives me a nice grip to it. Now, the only thing right now is I've had the smart cover for, you know, since the US launch, and I do have noticed that, you know, the wear and tear of folding the cover, it has been getting to some of the corners. But I mean, I think so far it's still done a pretty good job of staying, keeping its shape. And yeah, I think, you know, I think the elimination of sliding to unlock is huge. I mean, think about, you know, all the time that we will save. I know this sounds, you know, corny to just, you know, sliding to unlock is so easy, but you just don't realize how simple it is when you just open the lid and you're good to go. I mean, sliding to unlock is nice, but it's almost really kind of unnecessary when you think about it.
Yeah, if you remember the day of the launch, not only did Steve Jobs make a big deal about it, when you started to get the Andy Anatkos and the Engadget and those people who had hands-on with it, many of them were saying that they thought the biggest innovation of this product, the best new thing about the iPad 2 was this case. And to hear that, it just sounds ridiculous, but it really is. The way it can fold in these various things is great. The way they eliminated bulk, I agree with you. I think the Apple case last year was great, but it changed the whole look of your iPad. It bulked it up and it made it look like you were carrying around a leather portfolio, not this kind of beautiful device. This thing in itself looks great because it's so thin and the hinges are magnet and the brushed aluminum that they're made of. It's a very impressive looking thing. I've only shown a few people so far, but they were just blown away by the cover. They're like, oh, that thing is so cool. It looks so great. It doesn't take away any of the look of what we kind of, like, let's be honest, you don't always want to admit it, but part of the charm of Apple products is their look. So they've really nailed it with this case. Again, it sounds ridiculous. I'm sure there are people listening to this who don't have iPads yet and are like, are these two idiots really talking for 10 minutes about a cover? But it really is that good.
Yeah, I mean, I've learned to continue to appreciate the smart cover. When you are unraveling it back to your screen, it just kind of does it automatically, and there's this sort of gratifying sound that it makes. I don't know if you guys can hear this, but when the magnet finally attaches onto the front glass of the iPad, it just sounds so perfect. And the fact that when you want to get rid of the smart cover, you just pull it away, which is, you tend to forget sometimes that it is just attached by magnets.
And that's the thing, though. I really expected, oh, cool, that it's magnets because you're going to want to get rid of it a lot. But I find that I use it all the time because I figured, well, when you're just using it, like, say, holding it in bed reading, you're going to want to get rid of it. But no, you don't. You fold it in behind. And as Gary said, you can fold it all the way behind and it kind of protects the whole back. Or I think the Andy Anatko thing is what I was talking about, too. If you sort of fold it halfway and then halfway back, it makes one side thick. Like, like I mentioned, you see people do a newspaper that way. It just gives you like a grip to hold the thing. So I have not taken it off once since I've had it.
Awesome. Anything else you wanted to talk about with iPad?
Yeah, too? We're going to get into the apps, but I thought two more things that are worth mentioning. Here's one issue. You can hear I keep getting email on it. I know how to mute my phone. I haven't figured out how to turn that email noise off. So hopefully I don't get too many more emails, because it's funny, I get emails from listeners who say, oh, you or Gary had your phone on, and because they're listening,
Justin.
And it's usually me. But what you hear from a lot of people saying, well, it drives me crazy because then I keep looking at my phone. They hear that noise and then think they're getting an email or a text. But so now my iPad's doing it. But anyways, two other things that I think are worth pointing out is the typing on the iPad is another concern I had going in. I thought this is going to be the one hindrance from making it a really usable device. I had every intention of either buying a keyboard dock or the Bluetooth keyboard, and now I don't even know if I'll buy one. The typing, whether in portrait or landscape, it's slowly becoming my favorite way to type. You get all the benefit of the iPhone and the excellent autocorrect, but now it's big enough that I guess if you're a real typer, like you took typing in high school and you can type 100 words a minute and you do all that touch typing, this wouldn't be the same. But for someone who's not that great a typer to begin with, I actually find that I can type just as well, if not better, on the iPad than I can even on my MacBook.
Yeah, I mean, I think the typing is great. I enjoy typing in landscape more than portrait. But I do still think that, you know, if you are typing like an epic essay or something that requires a lot of typing, getting a Bluetooth keyboard would definitely make sense to reduce strain and just to for the sake of accuracy and getting it right. I mean, I find that typing quick, brief responses to email, that's fine. But in terms of typing, like, you know, 1,000 words, I could definitely do it. But I think, you know, using nothing beats a keyboard.
Yeah, and I think that's going to come down to preference for most people. I personally, and I think it's maybe just because I've spent so much time with the phone, I'm really starting to enjoy the way you operate the iPad, in the sense copying and pasting, selecting words, as opposed to using mouse gestures. For instance, I do certain kinds of work where when I'm, say, designing someone's website and they're sending me huge amounts of text that I have to then copy and then paste into a design. Of course, when you're on your MacBook, you're using the trackpad or you're using your mouse, you're copying, cutting, and pasting. So as an experiment, just for fun, I've tried this a couple times. I've changed a bunch of records and I timed it. And then I made those same changes using copy and paste with the iPad. And I'm actually quicker with the iPad. I actually find it easier to just select text, hit select all, hit paste with my finger. So again, that's just a matter of preference. But more and more, I'm finding that I like the day-to-day workflow, whatever you want to call it, the working environment of the iPad. And I can see that not only, I must not be alone, because it looks like Apple's new Lion operating system, they're trying to move more and more to that frame. So it must worry people who don't like some of the way things work on the iOS, but you've heard me for weeks on the podcast saying that every week I tend to find that there's certain tasks that I prefer iOS now, and the iPad just opens it up even more so.
Yeah, one thing that I haven't mentioned so far is that mail on the iPad, the way that it's laid out, it's actually the fastest way for you to mark your emails as read, because all it takes is just one tap. Now, I don't know how many emails people get out there, but I happen to get a ton of emails because every time someone comments on the blog, or I get, you know, certain, I don't know, basically comments on the blog, I do enjoy reading feedback from people. I do enjoy reading the comments. And sometimes, we did have a thread on the iPad in Canada.ca blog that people were coordinating their iPad 2 meetups. Now, that post in itself has over 700 comments. Now, you can imagine how long it would take to blast through them, but thanks to the magic of Gmail and IMAP and the iPad, I can blast through them in literally 30 seconds or less. I can just tap, 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 boom. And when I go back online to my computer, it it's synced, so it knows that my emails are read. And that's another reason why I love the iPad so much. I know that I can quickly blast through email, whereas on the web, I would have to tap each one with a mouse click, which does take a bit longer.
Yeah, when I first mentioned the iPad, when you asked for my initial impressions, I mentioned that I feel that the iPad today is a very different product than it was a year ago. And that's a lot of what I'm referring to. Last year, the apps tended to look like iPhone apps, just blown up. Now you have these landscape views or these sidebars as different things. The developers have really found a way to fit everything in. And as great as iOS is on the iPhone, which is the main way I've experienced it, with a little more room to breathe, you really see how elegant and an intuitive of an operating system is. I even like the little benefits of now you can fit six things in the dock and the folders fit more. It's just, if you think iOS is great on your iPod Touch or your iPhone, with that little more real estate to breathe, this is a really well thought out operating system. And we've heard rumors for months and years that Apple probably would like to eventually get rid of OS X and almost go to iOS. And I used to think people were crazy, but the more I use this thing, I can see why they're getting closer and closer together, because this is just a really great way to do it. And I'm sure there's always going to be people who are going to hate it, because there's still people who never use a mouse and know every million keyboard shortcut to avoid a mouse. So you're always going to have preferences, but every day my preference becomes more and more towards the iOS.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to come from Apple for iOS 5 for the iPad. But one thing that I would also like to talk about that I asked you about earlier was initially in the beta releases of iOS 4.3, Apple had multi-touch features. Now, for the iPad, now you can use five fingers to swipe out to recreate the home button. You can use four fingers to swipe up to bring up the multitasking bar. You can use four fingers to swipe left and right when you're within an app to switch between applications. And the only way you can enable this is if you download Xcode. If you're a developer, it's free, or you can buy it in the Mac App Store for $4.99. And you can just set this up instantly. Justin, I know you set this up, and what are your thoughts on using multi-touch with the iPad?
Well, first off, we'll try not to go too far, because I really believe this is something I read about this before and I thought it looked cool, but you really have to experience it to understand it. But to me, this is the single biggest improvement they've ever done to the iOS. I know there's people who barely use multitasking, so this isn't going to be a big deal, but I'm a multitask freak. I use my iPhone and now my iPad to do work. If I'm doing some web development and I'm in an FTP app trying to update some code and then I'm trying to preview it in Safari, I'm constantly double-clicking, spinning, doing like double-clicking, bringing that back up. Now to be able to just take four fingers, press up, and there's your taskbar, that's neat. But to be able to go four to the side or to the left to go through open apps, you can now... Put it this way, for people who are having trouble visualizing at home what we're referring to, I can now go from Safari to the app I'm using right now to read these notes and to email as quick as you can in iBooks flipping a page. You just swipe your finger and you're in that app. And to me, that's just changes the entire way you do things. And again, it's just another example of what I've been going on about all episode, about how smooth and how well thought out this operating system is. So I absolutely love it. And the other neat one is to close an app now. All you have to do is take all five fingers and sort of give a crumpling up a paper motion. And even though I just enabled this within the last few hours, I already can't imagine doing it the other way. It's already become habit for me. Every single time I have to close something, I just do it. I've even done it in a few apps thinking it would do something else, because it's such a fluid, easy motion that when I just wanted to close one part of Twitter, I did it. And then I'm like, no, jackass, you just closed the whole app. But it's a really cool way to do it. And one little tip for people out there that I just discovered last night, as Gary mentioned, if you're a paid developer, you can download Xcode 4 for free. You can download it from the Mac App Store for $4.99. But the other thing you can do is Xcode 3, because it's Xcode 4 in the App Store. Xcode 3 is still free on Apple's website and all kinds of other places online. You can find Xcode 3 anywhere. It does work. And all you have to do is install it, which is a pain because it's 4 gigs, and then it takes up about 10 gigs on your computer. Launch Xcode, plug in your iPad. A dialog box will pop up and say, do you want to use this iPad for development? Hit yes. Then if you use Xcode 3, you're going to get a bunch of weird messages saying, we don't recognize this device. We don't recognize this version of the operating system because it's an old version of the software when iPad 2 wasn't out. Just ignore. And then finally, it'll ask you to log into your developer account, hit cancel, and it's already done its magic. Then you can just unplug it from Xcode, and then you'll see the gestures menu in your settings of the iPad. So if you're not a developer and you don't want to pay the $4.99, just find Xcode 3 and you can enable these. And it's not that high tech. Like I said, the biggest pain of doing it is downloading a 4 gig file and then making sure you have 10 gigs of room. If you're on a laptop or something, I had to actually clear off a little bit of room because I've been going crazy with work lately. So that's the biggest pain. Actually doing it is pretty easy. And then just delete Xcode off your computer if you're not going to use it again.
Yeah, Xcode is a huge download, so it definitely does suck up a lot of space. Yeah, and it's great to experience this on the iPad. I know we're running to about our average time for the podcast. Let's finish off this episode with a couple quick app picks. For the audience listeners out there, I know they love hearing about some of the new apps that we're using. Justin, go ahead with any apps that you'd like to recommend, and then maybe I'll share a couple after that.
Yeah, I apologize in advance because I think I'm just going to recommend iPad apps. So, I'll give one right out to our patient iPhone listeners who've probably sat and listened to this and want to jump through a window if they have no interest in an iPad. There's an app called Sound Tracker Radio, and it's spelled sound and then tracker without the vowels, TRCKR, and it's a music streaming app that's very similar to Pandora. You pick a band you want, and then it plays music. And the best part about it is it's a solid app, and it works in Canada. And when Apple, in their description, I think they featured it somewhere I read, they basically described it as if Pandora and Facebook had a baby, this is what it would be, because it has a lot more social features. And it is really neat. Like I when I installed it, I created a bunch of stations and then invited a couple friends. And a couple minutes later, I got a pop-up saying, oh, so-and-so is listening to your U2 station. So you get that little bit of community in there. But if you just want a really solid free streaming app, it's great. And you can, I find even more than Pandora, it plays a lot of the artist you pick. So if you create a U2 station, every second song seems to be U2 and then a bunch of other songs that they've figured out that they like. And unfortunately, as we know, a lot of these music apps not only don't work in Canada, they don't work in a lot of our other international territories. And now that I'm aware that we have so many listeners worldwide, this app appears to work virtually everywhere worldwide. So that's my iPhone pick.
Okay. Any picks for the iPad?
I was just throwing it over to you if you wanted to pick one.
Okay. One app that I've been playing with lately, I'm going to say for iPad 2 owners, this one is a great download. I think it has amazing value. That's Angry Birds Rio in HD. It's free for the iPad. It really does bring out the graphics capabilities of the iPad 2. And I think so far it's a completely different game because when you are trying to free the birds instead of having pigs that explode, the birds will break out of their cages and fly away. So it's a little different than Angry Birds traditionally, but I still found it to be a lot of fun and it's free. For those people who don't mind becoming contract killers, there is an app called Contract Killer. It's a really kind of corny game where you just go around, you're a contract killer with a sniper rifle. This is a game that you will probably only play for, 10 or 15 minutes, but you can add up some points and buy different guns and all that stuff. So if you're a fan of shooting games, that's a worthy game. It's free as well.
Glad you picked Angry Birds, because I would hate to have an episode where we didn't bring up Angry Birds. There was a few Angry Birds stories that I purposely skipped so we could have an Angry Birds free podcast. But
well, if we're back on the topic of Angry Birds, today there's been we posted on the site about this Angry Birds movie unofficial trailer, and it's really well done by the group at I think it's Rooster something. I can't remember the name of these guys. But go check it out. It's on the web. It's taken over. It's this hilarious Angry Bird trailer, and it's done really, really well. So definitely check it out if you are an Angry Birds fan. Yes, it's by Rooster Teeth. There we go, Rooster Teeth. Yeah, that's my Angry Birds rant for this episode.
My next app pick isn't really an app pick because you get it free with the iPad, but it's, again, one of the most surprising features for me of the iPad 2, and that's the Safari browser. To me, it's everything you love about the iPhone browser and everything you love about Safari on the Mac that I can now say without a doubt, even just after 2 days, I will do 99% of my web browsing now on the iPad 2. You get all the pinch and all those little features you like in the swipe and just the elegance and the basic look of it, but then you also have the little more real estate. I can now enable my bookmark bar. So things like 1Password, if you have the little bookmarklet in your in that little bookmark bar, now I can put in my password so much easier. Again, if you're not really into bookmarklets, it's not a big deal, but I'm bookmarklets nerd. I have them for Delicious. I have them for Twitter. I have them all kinds of custom ones for my WordPress installations. So to now just be able to have this toolbar up at the top, and I don't understand why they won't let you do it on the iPhone. I know it doesn't look as good, but some of the third-party browsers have the bookmark bar. So you can enable that in Safari. And again, to me, you have the real estate and the look from the desktop version with all the gestures and everything I like from the iPhone version. So I now think the best browser in existence on the planet is Safari for iPad 2 or iPad 1, any iPad.
Very nice. Okay. I think that pretty much.
Well, we should mention one more app that Gary and I basically spent half an hour discussing in the pre-show. It's free. Everybody who picked up an iPad 2 should go out and grab right away. If you've had your iPad for a while and you haven't got this, get it. Or if you did download this app and you weren't impressed, as Gary said he wasn't impressed with, it's improved a lot, and that is Flipboard. Flipboard is by far my favorite third-party app. I said to Gary, this is a good way to describe it. The app is so good, it takes an ugly, crappy site like Facebook and makes it readable. You put in your Facebook credentials and you can read your wall. And if someone's posted 16 pictures, you get 16 nice little thumbnails that you can click on. If someone's posted a video from any site, it's nice in line. You can watch the video right there without being linked out to somewhere else and have Facebook have that stupid pop-up saying you're leaving Facebook. Or sometimes when somebody shares a link, it's just this little link with this crippled sort of description that doesn't even make sense because they truncate it. None of that on here. It's great. And that's only Facebook. If you put your Twitter in, it's even better. Beautiful way to read through your Twitter timeline. It almost makes it like a newspaper. If somebody shared a picture or a video, it's right in line. Then the normal tweets are just in a column down the right that are just text-based. I put it in my Google Reader. So if you use Google Reader to keep track of your news, the best part is it will import all your stuff from Google Reader, make a beautiful layout with the videos and pictures embedded right in there. And the best part, it marks it as read on Google Reader. So if you're used to using Pulse and these other apps that you read a bunch on them, and then the next time you go into Google Reader, you're stuck with a whole bunch of articles you already read, not with Flipboard. They mark it as read. And that's just all the stuff that I like about it. You can actually just, if you don't want to curate your own news, you don't want to put in Twitter, you don't want to put in your Google Reader, you can just pick music, news, video games, whatever it is, and they have all kinds of great sources. I remember when the app first came out, there was some content producers sort of mad at Flipboard because they were scraping their content, but it appears most of them are smart enough now to realize that let people read your stuff. So a lot of the big content producers that we all know and love are in Flipboard ready for you to read.
Yeah, Flipboard is great. Like Justin said, when it first started, they were actually limiting the number of accounts I could sign up with Twitter and Facebook. And that was kind of a turnoff for me, because I think developers need to come out with their best and brightest apps right from the start, free of bugs, for that, you know, first time impressions mean a lot, right? Especially when there are, you know, 300,000 apps plus in the App Store. But now they've done a great job, and it's phenomenal. I really like it. Another app that I do like is Zite. I talked about that last time. I can't remember if I did or not, but that's another app that you should get for your iPad too. So yeah, there's, you know, we could go on forever, but
yeah, I was going to say, I just realized that I didn't even talk about GarageBand, but we don't have enough time. But spoiler alert, if you bought an iPad, go buy GarageBand. It's worth it. Even if you don't like music, just to bang on the drums, it's worth it. We'll talk about it more in a future episode. But yeah, I can't believe I didn't mention that. Get GarageBand. Yeah. We'll discuss it another time.
Yeah, I think that's okay, because you know, the majority of the time we've been focusing on iPhone news, but you know, it's nice to throw in some iPad news to mix it up. iPad 2 seems to be what people are really interested in right now, and you know, we're happy to share our thoughts on anything related with the iPad as well. So once again, thanks for listening to the iPhone podcast. Please, please, please rate us on iTunes. I have read some new reviews on iTunes, and thank you to those people who have rated us. Your feedback is very important to us. You can follow the show and provide feedback by visiting theiphonepodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. I'm located at twitter.com/iPhoneinCanada, and Justin is located at twitter.com/JustinLuey. That's L-U-E-Y. So once again, thanks for listening. If you're hunting for an iPad 2, don't give up. Be persistent. I wish you the best of luck. Justin, any final words?
I'll just do two quick shout outs. I want to thank all our U.S. listeners. I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I didn't realize not only was our audience really international, that almost 50% of the audience was from the U.S. And what was funny is, at the time of mentioning that, I think we had one or two reviews on the U.S. store. And as soon as I mentioned that on the podcast, we got a whole bunch, and I think now we have 18 or 19, and they're all really great reviews. So again, we're going to keep bringing some of the Canadian stuff to people, because I think that's unique and there's not a lot of coverage for Canadian stuff, but I'm definitely more not aware of the fact that we have listeners all over the world. So we're going to make sure you guys get news too, and we don't go overboard with the Canadian only content. And then the last shout out is, last week I mentioned an app called Convor. I mentioned that I created the iPhone podcast group in there. And even though it's just been a week, there's at least 30 people subscribed to it. There's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 threads with a lot of conversation. It's actually been pretty great. So it's a cool app that has lots of other categories. So again, download Convor. And if you're going to use Convor, then drop by the iPhone podcast group. And I've been giving away promo codes and asking questions, and people were coordinating some of the iPad stuff. It's a great resource. So join us there. And thanks for the people who already did.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. And we will see you next week.